Welcome to Falcon and the Winter Soldier TV Talk. That's right. We're continuing on our TV Talk Plus. I'm your host, Bo, and with me, as always, the real host of the show, the host with the most. He's not a ghost, but he might post some of his thoughts on Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Bell.
Insert fake applause here. Or I guess it'd be real applause. It depends on where the sample comes from.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, one imagines that like they recorded a live studio audience applauding at some point. Applauding? Applausing. Anyway, point is, they were people at some point. They're dead now, maybe.
Yeah. Let's get a sample from the 1920s, a lo-fi applause sample.
Yeah, dude. Way tangent here at the very top of the show. Very unprofessional. But the other night, me and my wife were listening to some records. We had just gone to a local record shop very recently. And just did the bargain bin, you know, dumpster dive type situation for the 99-cent, whatever we could find. And we found one called, I think it was called like Piano Cocktail Jazz or something like that. And we were like, nice. Oh, this is, yeah, it's perfect. Like we love making cocktails and kind of closing out the day with, you know, a Manhattan or something like that. So we'll put this on the old record player and enjoy it. So we were listening to it the other night and just out of the blue, she goes, you know, I bet all of the people who recorded this are dead. And I'm like, which, if you know my wife, she is not dark. She is like the least dark person ever. But it was like, huh, I bet they are.
Yeah.
Yeah, we all will. Don't let that creep you out. The certainty of death. Like, ooh, I'm gonna end up over there in the old cemetery, regardless of what podcast I listen to. But that's the
cemeteries. Yes. And I'm shooting my remains into space.
Oh my. Well, there you go. And you'll be on the moon just like Captain America. All right. Hey-o. We are back on track, baby.
see, you're picking up what I'm putting down.
Yeah, that worked out nice. We are about to talk about Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Of course, one of the many Disney Plus shows in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. This was the second of the Disney Plus entries for the Marvel Cinematic Universe following WandaVision. If you hadn't listened yet to our WandaVision TV Talk, be sure to check that episode out. It came out a couple weeks ago, and we will be going forward after this one with Loki TV Talk next. But man, I'm stoked to talk about this one because, well, first things first, we didn't do this last time and we really should have. We will be talking spoilers. So we're going to be talking about this series as a whole. This will not be an episodic review or anything like that. This is kind of a pseudo retrospective, except for it came out relatively recently. But with the way that content moves and everything else, in all likelihood, you've already seen it. If not, go see it first. Watch the series and then come back and we will share these thoughts with you then. But for now, we will share them with you now. Yes.
Yes.
That makes sense.
Enjoy our thoughts as we feed them into your brain.
Exactly.
Via your ear holes.
All right, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, man. When it was announced, when we got the kind of the full gambit of the MCU entries on the Disney Plus series, out of curiosity as a whole, which one were you most excited about going based solely off the premise in the title?
Premise in the title, probably WandaVision, I think. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just because I liked Vision and I didn't think he got a proper send off or anything. Pretty anticlimactic for like the most powerful Avenger. So I was excited to see more Vision. So probably just off the get go that one.
Okay. So same for different reasons. I would challenge the concept that Vision is the most powerful Avenger. I think without question, Wanda is the most powerful Avenger. But at the time, Wanda was an Avenger. Even then, man, she had the power. She had the power. She just didn't quite yet know how to wield it.
Yeah, but like, you know, if you have a Dodge Challenger Hellcat and you only use the black key and not the red key, it doesn't matter that you have 700 horsepower.
What if you use the blue key?
Well, the blue key, you never, ever use the blue key.
Glad you're here to tell me these things. I had no clue. I don't know cars, but I do know TV shows, man. And I am right there with you. I was really stoked for WandaVision. I really wanted to see Wanda explored, actually more so than Vision. Although I was surprised with that series, just how quickly Vision became one of my favorite MCU characters. In fact, both Wanda and Vision really shot up to the top very quickly in that show. But I would say a close second to my excitement for that show was actually this one right here. I was very curious to see how Marvel was going to cash the check that they wrote at the end of Endgame with Sam Wilson becoming Captain America. Now, something that I thought was, you know, it was done very well. And actually, if you look back, I'm sure many people have, but if you've not gone back and rewatched Endgame and specifically the ending of Endgame after watching this series, it puts things, I think, a little bit more into context. I don't know that we as an audience at the time knew that it was predetermined by Bucky and Steve that Sam was going to become Captain America. In fact, it was kind of a blink and you miss it kind of thing. If you look at how, you know, for example, when Bruce and Sam are working to try and get, you know, get him back and everything, you look over to Bucky and Bucky's just smiling. He knows what's happening. Like he's just
seen the theory.
What's the theory?
So, okay. So yeah, like the thread you're going on, you're absolutely right. Like Cap and Bucky totally figured this out beforehand, which is why Bucky was not alarmed at all. Like he knew it was coming. He knew this was going to happen and all of that stuff. And if you'll notice, the shield in Falcon and Winter Soldier is not the same shield that Cap uses at the end of Endgame.
Right.
And throughout Endgame.
Yeah, of course. Shield.
And so I watched this video that was really interesting. And it was talking about how, you know, the time travel rules are, we kind of, I guess, say we understand them in that, like, you know, you can't go back in time and change time because it's your present now. The past is your present.
Well, now we know, I think, I guess to some extent we'll get into it, Loki. It does apply here, though. So I think we can talk about it just fine. But I feel like Loki helped clear up a lot of how the time travel rules worked.
Yes. But the specific theory was talking specifically about Bucky and Cap knowing ahead of time and where that shield came from. Essentially, what it was saying was that, you know, Cap goes back in time. He gets the girl. And, you know, a lot of people were saying, oh, like Captain America wouldn't just stand by and like watch all these things happen. And it's like, well, he didn't because he was there. Or maybe it was like, I wish I should have watched the video in preparation, but I am completely professional and didn't. But essentially what it boils down to is that Sam Wilson in that universe was Captain America.
Interesting.
Yeah. And that shield was Sam's shield. And so Steve, when he comes back, gets because either like Cap died or he never woke up, or at some point it was, you know, when the Avengers happened, like Sam Wilson was Captain America.
I don't accept that. Interesting theory.
Well, I don't know that the specifics of it, but essentially the shield was Sam's. Our Cap goes and gets that shield, brings it back to our time because Cap's shield was blown up, and gives it to Sam. It's already Sam's shield.
Interesting. I mean, no, it's a cool theory. It's very much a cool theory. However, I'm very much of the mindset that Steve, you know, he was obviously on a different, you know, he's on a variant Earth, if you will. He was somewhere in the multiverse. He lived his life there. I would assume that the Steve of that Earth also, you know, got unfrozen at some point, you know, so, but he, yeah, I do think that, you know,
again, I don't know the specifics of it, but at some point Cap retired early and gave the shield to Sam. In that universe, but not because he, but like not after the Endgame events. It was before the Endgame events happened in that universe.
Yeah. I mean, all right. So I mean,
I'll send you the video if I can find it.
It's a cool theory. No, it's a very cool theory that, for sure. But I do think that takes away from the notion that this Cap made this decision as opposed to seeing it play out on a different Earth and being like, oh, I should totally give this to Sam. Like
it's not like that. He's not like saying, oh yeah, Sam's a great choice. He was like,
If he saw it happen, I don't know. Would cheapen it for me, but regardless,
I have to get the video.
Right? All right. Get the video. We'll put it in the show notes for this for anybody that wants to see that as well. But regardless, man. Okay. So that notwithstanding, it does match up really well. You can tell that Bucky is very, you know, well aware of what's going on. It's not like, you know, it's not like he was passed over or anything as some people may have felt at the time. He was very much kind of part of the decision. And, you know, these, you want to talk about characters that have not really been fleshed out. Bucky and Sam in particular, and especially Bucky, like very little exploration of their characters on the big screen. In fact, like you know, we got a little bit of Sam and kind of his backstory in Winter Soldier. But Bucky was a robot for pretty much that entire time. In fact, we really haven't spent any time with Bucky post World War II in his own mind at all. Like, you know, he was there in Infinity War. He shot some alien dudes, and he was there in Endgame. He shot some alien dudes, but like, that's about it. We have no idea who this guy is in the modern era. And let me just say, he adjusted to the fact that he was now living in the future pretty quickly.
Well, you know, when you find out that you are a, you know, secret assassin used by Hydra to kill people for, you know, the last however many years, the future is probably not all that shocking to you.
I get, you know what? That's a good point. That's a really good point. Man, I loved the introduction of kind of him specifically looking at, you know, the him dealing with kind of the trauma and the tragedy of having killed all of these people, including innocents, him kind of taking this. Is it now? I've never been to AA, but as I understand it, like this is he's utilizing similar tactics to when you're in kind of an addictive type of situation where you have to go back and, like, I guess, apologize to people or just confess to people.
I think that is a step. I think that is one of the 12 steps.
Yeah.
Is to apologize to the people that you've wronged.
Right. And so here, obviously, he has wronged people, but I don't know. It's a complex situation. Obviously, he was the Winter Soldier. Obviously, he had no control over his actions. And yet, you know, he still has to pay penance for him. I like that he's owning it, though.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's one of those where I don't think it's for him. I think it's for the people.
For sure. Yeah,
right.
For sure.
It's yeah, because yeah, he didn't have control over his actions when those things happened. But that doesn't matter to the person whose, you know, father you killed.
Right.
and for him to go and say, I know, despite not having control over my actions, what I did was wrong. And there's really nothing I can do to apologize for that. But I'm going to do it anyway, because, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Well, and it gives closure for the individual. Here's my question, though. Did it give closure for us? Because I feel like his whole personal journey was tied into that one guy and, you know, his son's death and everything. And, you know, we saw Bucky dealing with that. We saw, you know, the dad dealing with it, but we never really got the closure of Bucky actually having the conversation. They kind of, I would argue, in kind of almost like a cheap way, cut away from it so that we as an audience wouldn't have to deal with that reality.
I thought they did.
They showed him going to the house, but we never really saw,
we never saw the conversation.
Right.
Well, I mean, there were some heavy messages in this series overall.
It was a heavy series. I like that, man. I like the fact that they didn't shy away, especially from the racial tension of Sam becoming Captain America. Part of me was nervous that they were going to just try to, like, pretend like, you know, in the MCU is a post-racialized America or something like that. And I'm like, you post-Killmonger, you're not doing that. Like, this, that ain't happening. So, I mean, like, I was glad to see that they took the harder route, so to speak, and used that as an opportunity to have some conversations, which is great. And I love the fact that we got an introduction to the, I guess, the second Captain America, if you will, and Isaiah. I was really glad they introduced Isaiah Bradley. Interestingly enough, and this kind of plays into, I think, kind of some of the criticisms overall, it seems as though there may have been more they wanted to do with him in the series, because he's not as old. The actor is not as old as the character is. And so they clearly aged him up. And I got to wonder if, like, they were planning on doing more there and then some things got cut. I'm not entirely sure. Loved his introduction. I actually, man, so I was on a podcast called Once Upon a Time in Wakanda back in the day, and we did a speculation as to what, like, the future post Endgame looks like. And I basically called this entire series.
Did you know?
Yeah, in terms of how they were going to deal with Sam and how they were going to, you know, pull in Patriot and Isaiah. And like, I was pretty close. That's pretty close. I didn't call that it was going to happen during a global pandemic. Didn't call that. And I didn't call that, you know, that it would be probably one of the least interesting overall, unfortunately, of the Disney Plus series. But, you know, in terms of what I called, I liked, and I liked the fact that we leaned into that.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was pretty close. All right. So let's talk about it, man. Let's talk about Sam. We finally get an exploration of his character beyond just the fact that he is a veteran. We go down to New Orleans to meet his family. We find out that he is not just Sam. He is, wait for it, Uncle Sam. And Uncle Sam became Captain America. Get it? Get it, Belle? You get it?
No.
Uncle Sam. He's Uncle Sam.
I don't understand.
He's got nephews and he's uncle. His name is Sam. He's an uncle because he has nephews and he's Captain America.
I'm still not following you.
Shut up, man. Yes, you do. yeah.
Does he want me to buy war bonds? That's the question.
No, he's not yet. He's not quite that star spangled man. Okay. So New Orleans. This is not the first time we've been to New Orleans in the MCU.
It is not.
But always love a trip down south.
It was kind of neat, you know, especially the aspect of them trying to get a loan. And he's like, you know, you can't, oh yeah, you saved the world. That's awesome. But we can't give you a loan. So
man, yes. Got major like local football hero vibes type deal, like, oh, let me get a picture with you and everything.
And the fact that like Tony Stark didn't pay him anything, like, what is this?
That was interesting to me. That was interesting. I mean, like, I know that he and Tony weren't exactly close, but you'd think if they were having trouble, I mean, Tony's dead at this point.
Yeah, but like you figure the Avengers would be like an institution that could, like, I don't know, pay people.
I guess so. But at the same, they would pay people, but all right, one imagines they could pay people. But
maybe with the Sokovia Accords, it was like a government thing and he just had a really terrible government salary.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think they do, man. I don't think the Avengers pays a salary. Like, there's lodging, obviously, on the kind of Avengers campus. But no, I don't get the sense that the Avengers pay. And in terms of, because I did struggle with it, I was like, man, how do you have Tony Stark on speed dial, but you're having like money problems, you know?
Yeah, like, you know, Tony's got a job. Like, I mean, Cap didn't. He was in the military. I mean, like, when he woke up and was like, I'm like, what was he doing in his spare time? Like, was he working? Was he like,
he was making those videos for the high school.
I guess that's where he got his money from.
That's where he got his money from.
And I don't know. I did that whole situation just reminded me of Anchorman. And I just kept repeating every episode. The Human Torch was denied a bank loan.
The Falcon was denied a bank loan. Captain America was denied a bank loan. Yeah, no, That's pretty good. Yeah, the interaction was good. I think that was kind of a quick introduction into the world, and then also just an acknowledgement of like, hey, we're going to talk about some stuff in this show. You thought we might, and guess what? We are. So that was good to see. You know, this tension of being Captain America, and that's really kind of the heart of this series as a whole, is like, what does it mean to be Captain America? And you know, we get kind of this contradiction of Sam, who sees Captain America as Steve Rogers, not necessarily as this kind of icon or institution of the country, but as his friend, as a quality good man who was willing to do what he needed to for anyone. Like, he was a self-sacrificial hero and one of the best of us. And so when Sam sees Captain America, that's what he sees. When Bucky sees Captain America, he sees something very similar, but on top of that, he sees, you know, this kid that he used to protect that now that grew up and started to protect him and saved him. That is that shield, I believe, at one point even points out, that's his family. Like, it is as connected to him as, say, Thor's hammer is connected to him. And losing it would be akin to losing like a loved one or something of that nature. it would be tragic. And so, you know, we see kind of these two very personal relationships, but what is Captain America to the U.S. government? To the U.S. government, Captain America is what he was originally intended to be.
Propaganda.
Yeah, exactly. A propaganda tool. And so we get introduced to the character of John Walker. Now, U.S. Agent, man, how familiar were you with U.S. Agent moving into this?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but Captain America was, quote, killed. And was it Bucky who... Has U.S. Agent always been John Walker?
I feel like John Walker definitely predates Bucky's return.
Okay, because I have a vivid recollection of being in a comic book shop and seeing the cover. It looked like U.S. Agent's costume. He's got a 1911 45 caliber pistol, like pointed at the person, you know, looking at the comic or whatever, and Cap's shield. And I thought. That was like after Cap was shot and somebody came over to be Captain America again, but it wasn't Captain America. It was U.S. Agent, I think. I don't really have a lot of background with U.S.
Agent. Yeah, U.S. Agent's going to predate all that. But yeah, man, no, I love the way this character was introduced here. Instantly, after Sam goes through this like heartfelt process of giving up the shield, you know, taking the Indiana Jones route of it belongs in a museum. And you know, having just such reverence and care for where it should be and where it belongs, and you know, essentially kind of making this decision that like Captain America was Steve Rogers is Captain America, no one else can wield the shield, therefore it kind of belongs as this symbol to inspire, you know, future generations, but also to help tell his story. That's going to come back into the series as well. John Walker enters into the scene. He looks the part. He is blonde, he's white. He doesn't have the same build as Captain America, but you can tell he is definitely at like that peak physical conditioning for where he's at. He is not a super soldier, but he is a soldier and he's well decorated. He seems by all appearances to be something of a jock, but kind of a good guy, but a jock. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like there's that really intimate moment, right, where he's about to be, revealed as Captain America on the football field and whatnot, where he's in there and he's nervous about it and things like that. And you kind of get this idea that like, he feels like this is it's an honor to him that's been bestowed upon him. And, there's a lot of gravitas around that. But it seems like the longer he stays in that role, the more it kind of like corrupts him.
Well, I mean, there is, so it's a combination of things. On the one hand, like, yes, you're right. There is kind of this reverence and honor that he kind of has in gaining the shield and everything else. And it puts that on certainly both in private and in public. However, there's also this strong sense as we see him, not like the position kind of gets to him, but I think it just reveals something about him, which is he has this really strong sense of entitlement when it comes to the role. Like, you know, he trained, right? Like he fought in the war and everything. He should be Captain America, not anybody else. Like he deserves this. Like he's the actual super soldier, and he's not even a super soldier. And you kind of see that come out in a lot of different ways. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even before he like, and that's the thing. There is this exploration of what does it mean not just to be Captain America, but what does it mean to be a super soldier? What is being a super soldier mean? Is that is it a good thing? But of course they reintroduce Baron Zemo, and honestly, man, they kind of redeem / retcon Baron Zemo. He gets kind of like the Mandarin treatment to some extent, not as, you know, significant or drastic, but I kind of feel like they did right by Zemo here in a way that, as much as I love Civil War, Zemo kind of got done dirty.
Well, they needed a name, right? They needed
in
like,
Civil War, know,
yeah, in Civil War, they needed a comic book character who was, you know, a big bad, who comic book fans would recognize, right?
Right.
And that's all they wanted was a name. I'm glad they used Zemo, and I agree. I think they did sort of, you know, quote, redeem his character here. He was still referred to as a Baron, right?
In
Civil War?
Yeah, but I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I think it was implied that that was his name.
They called him Helmet.
Oh, did they?
I thought so.
I don't know, man. I don't remember them ever referring to him as a Baron in Civil War. I feel like that would have been more of a plot point too, just given the fact that you would have had a Baron from a, you know, from a foreign nation who murdered or who is, you know, assassined the king of another sovereign nation. You know what I mean? Like there's a, I don't know. I think if they did, they certainly glazed over it very quickly.
Yeah. And I could be incorrect on that. But yeah, yeah. He's basically just a name in Civil War, a name for comic book character or comic book fans to be like, oh yeah, I know that guy. I know that guy. And then like, I don't. Yeah. But again, like I say, this
I know that
time.
Guy, I know that guy. I don't know this guy. I
say this every time. It's like, you know, if you see a character announced for a particular project, just don't go in with any expectation that that they're going to be exactly how they are in the comics, because
yeah,
you know, we got over a decade of new IP in this MCU that they're going to build on. Yes, they're taking a character from the comics and putting them in here, but that doesn't mean they're going to be the comic book character, if that makes sense.
I mean, no doubt. I mean, it's not like, I'll put it this way. Like it's not like I was mad that Zemo didn't look like himself, but we've come to a stage in the game, man, where I think people want the comic accurate, you know, the more ridiculous, the better. Like, give Zemo a purple mask. It's awesome when Zemo wears a purple mask. It's not weird or lame. Like, no, we're at a time right now where we want the ridiculous to be made legitimate, especially because the, you know, in the real world, the ridiculous somehow has become legitimate. And so like, so there is kind of an aspect of that we want in our fantasy. And I can see very specifically how, you know, given Zemo the purple mask, giving him more of a deep dive into the character to make him more similar to his comic book counterpart. I loved his exploration or his entire like unpacking and philosophy of super soldiers. He made some, I mean, decent points, and villains are the best when they actually make some decent points. You know,
you're out of line, but you're right.
Right. Well, I mean, he's out of line, but he's not wrong. Exactly. But anyway, so I loved getting Zemo back here. So I'm trying to, I want to focus on what I loved about this before getting into some of the criticisms. Cause like I mentioned before, like this overall in review does kind of fall flat for me personally. But one of the decisions I love is that they brought the Dora Milaje back. Bucky, of course, up until this point, the majority of his sane time where his mind was his own was spent in Wakanda. And, you know, in that time, he obviously developed relationships there. You know, he was, Wakanda was not necessarily known for housing outsiders. So it was kind of a big deal that he was there in the first place. And having kind of an exploration of what that relationship looks like between him and the nation, and then also just him and specifically with Ao, who herself, she actually first appeared in Civil War, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Yeah. Remember, because like, you know, what was it? Black Widow like walks up to T'Challa and she steps up. She goes, "Move, or you will be moved." T'Challa's like, you know, as tempting as that would be.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, it was. I've loved that they brought her character back. I'm hoping. I think there's been an outcry for there to be an exploration, a deeper exploration into her character, possibly getting either her own Disney Plus series or a Disney Plus series that maybe explores Wakanda through her eyes. Could be really interesting. So hoping to see more of her. I was glad that the Dora Milaje came back because, again, Zemo killed T'Chaka. Like, the Wakanda's not going to be cool with the fact that the guy that killed their king is just rolling around. Like, that's gonna cause some problems. And I was glad to see that they addressed that, because early on when he showed up, I was like, no, guys, y'all can't bust out Zemo and not have Wakanda have something to say. Like, that's something's gonna happen.
Yeah, because that's the whole thing, right? Is like, you know, Black Panther, T'Chaka chose not to kill him. T'Challa chose not to kill him because, you know, you're going to go to prison. You're going to, you know, that's the justice that you will face. Not my justice.
The living are not done with you yet.
Yeah, exactly. And so, for them to break him out, that's kind of like, you're sort of like spitting on our king's decree.
Yep.
And he killed our king's dad. And so, yeah. Not a smart move.
I was glad to see. And that's one of the things that I've been just constantly impressed with these Marvel series, man, is that they are very good about maintaining kind of the character continuity that we've seen. Not to jump ahead, but like, you know, even as we record this, today's What If, I'm guessing you have not seen it yet.
That is correct.
Okay. So I won't spoil it, but I'm assuming you at least know what this one's about, right?
I think it's about Killmonger, right?
Okay. Yeah. So I'm not going to spoil anything. I'll just say this. When they first started promoting kind of the what if Killmonger saved Iron Man, and the way in that which that's marketed, I was like, I don't know where y'all are going with this, but this doesn't feel right. And then when you watch it, you're like, okay, I see what you did. Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And so I won't say any more than that because Belle hasn't seen it yet and I don't want to spoil anything, but suffice to say they didn't like, you know, it wasn't like, oh, let's make Killmonger a hero. Cause he's so popular and everything. Let's change it up and make him like it as if, you know, he, what if he was T'Challa or something of that nature? It's like, no, I see what you did. That was good. Well handled. And all of the characters in those What If series, you see them acting the way that they are supposed to act, which is great. So obviously that's top of mind. Cause
except for one
now. Well,
his name rhymes with Anos.
Yeah. Hey man, just had to have that conversation with T'Challa, man. Actually, I will say this. Okay. We'll get to What If. We'll get there.
Yeah. We'll just write it down. Write it down.
We'll get there for sure. All right. So yes, I think that concludes all the stuff I liked about this show. Cause there's a lot I didn't like about this show.
Yeah.
I hate to say it, man. Like right now it's definitely the least favorite of the Disney Plus series. I like how it fleshed out the universe. I like that obviously, you know, Falcon becoming Captain America. I like that journey. And that is something I enjoyed. I like the exploration of Bucky and who Bucky is post Winter Soldier. And so I liked that. I liked kind of making sure that the Dora Milaje were tied into that and how that interwove with Falcon's journey. I like the fact that, you know, obviously the shield has always had ties to Wakanda because it's vibranium. The fact that his costume or his new suit was actually designed by Wakanda provides for some interesting, you know, potential future relationships between the Avengers. And I mean, we already know that Okoye was essentially an acting Avenger during the blip. But I'm very curious to see how like Shuri even like what her role looks like in the future Avengers. And so having
Okoye might actually still be an Avenger based on Shang-Chi post credits.
What?
No, wait, she wasn't there. She wasn't there. I'm conflating blue hologram scenes in my in my brain.
you're getting that mixed up. Yeah.
It's just I see the blue hologram of Captain Marvel and it just brings me to that scene in Endgame.
Yeah, no, I get that. Yeah,
the wires are crossed there for a second. My apologies.
It's all good. It's definitely all good. But yeah, so anyway, point is like I love the interweaving there. And I think that's I enjoyed a lot. I love the fact that we didn't shy away from racial tensions around having a black Captain America, especially in the modern age. I was really, really, you know, like I said, enjoyed the fact that we got a chance to see Zemo fleshed out, become a little bit more like his comic book counterpart. Absolutely loved that we got to, I like the dance just fine. You know, I'm not hating on the dance. I thought that was pretty cute.
Yeah, you gotta love the Zemo dance. Come on.
Yeah. More great TV talk up in just a few minutes, but first we got to pay a few bills. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I want to hear the things you don't like because I agree with you on all the things that you did like.
Yeah.
Everything that you covered there, I agree with. I think was a positive for the show as a whole.
Yeah.
I also have some things that I wasn't too happy about with the show. I'm curious as to where we will be the same and where we will differ.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. And I should also mention too, the introduction and kind of the use of, what is it? Battlestar, I believe is the character's name. And kind of juxtaposing the buddy, buddy, you know, white cop, black cop situation that you had kind of in both of these, both of these two teams going up against each other. Also kind of the subtle or perhaps not so subtle communication that America is definitely fine with a black superhero standing right next to and not, and you know, right besides and right behind Captain America, but not necessarily in the role of Captain America.
Yeah.
And I thought that the way they kind of explored that through Battlestar was really interesting. Yeah. Okay. So here's the deal. Whew. Okay. The Flag Smashers. Now, conceptually, I'm down. I think that the concept of the Flag Smashers and the concept of what kind of a freedom fighter slash pseudo terrorist group would look like in a post blip world is a ripe area for exploration. This was the first time that we got a look. I mean, arguably, we got a little bit of a look in Spider-Man, but really on a global kind of Avengers level scale, we began to see what the world looked like after the snap, and more importantly, during the snap, through the eyes of the Flag Smashers. So I dug that. I dug their motivation. However, it was a little convoluted. I feel as though they were trying to say something they never actually said. And I don't really even fully know what that was. And that, I think, hurt the villain in particular of Carly as kind of, I guess the main Flag Smasher, the Flag Smasher herself. But it really kind of helped her motivation. We kept on hearing like how great she is and how great things were before the blip, but, or what rather during the blip, and how like the worlds came together and we need a more globalized economy, or rather more globalized civilization. And cool, but like I don't know, I kind of needed more from them as an organization to kind of get like, all right, so like, wait, so what are y'all fighting for again? Because I even like going back and trying to remember it was a little confusing, right?
Well, they were fighting that organization that was attempting basically to like stick all the people who were blipped into like internment camps, essentially.
Yeah, no, I got that as like that one aspect of it, but I was trying to, and that made sense, but like I got the sense that there was more than that. Like there was a larger issue that they were actually kind of existing for. Not like we came together to throw this down, but like, I don't know, they seemed to have something more they were fighting for that just never became quite clear to me.
Well, yeah, it was
break it down for me. Like, no, by all means, please.
Trying to remember it is killing me, because like I remember watching the show and I remember going up to a certain point being like, okay, yeah, Carly's right. And I don't see how Sam's going to approach her and try to convince her that she's wrong when she's not wrong. The only point at which Sam has any sort of moral high ground over her is when she starts killing civilians for no reason. And that was the thing that turned me off about it, is like, you know, I liked the idea that this group of bad people were right, like in what they were doing, like their cause was justified and what they were doing was morally right. And I was like, that's going to be super interesting, because like how is Sam gonna go in there and be like, you know, I don't know what to tell you, like, you know, you're not wrong. So how do you fight that, right? Like, right. without being an agent of what they're trying to break down. And so I was really excited for that. And that was going to be really, really interesting. And then they just kind of turned it into, oh no, Carly just kind of went crazy and now she's just killing people. And so that gives Sam the high ground, and to be like, no, you know, your cause is not just if you're willing to do these things.
Yeah.
And I just felt like that was kind of a cop out, a way to avoid awkward situations.
But that's the thing, they end up writing themselves in a situation, if that's the, like, into a hole. And so you have to kind of make larger changes. Either the villain needs to get villainous or become a hero. And I think that,
well, it doesn't have to be like that, right? Like look at Professor X and Magneto, right? They both have the same end game, right? Is to have a world where mutants are accepted and not persecuted. It's just that Charles Xavier wants to go like the diplomatic, like cultural route.
Right. But so then all right. In this situation though, help me out. So what were the Flag Smashers about? What do they want?
Well, they, I'm trying to remember exactly how like they kind of,
I feel like they put it 30 different ways. This is part of my problem, is it got so convoluted. It was hard to like keep up with like, okay,
I remember when I was watching it and it made sense and it was clear to me.
No, it would make sense for like maybe like one episode, like, oh, okay. And then like something else would happen and be like, wait, what? I thought, okay, wait, what?
Well, I think where you start saying like, wait, what, is when Carly starts doing stuff that doesn't make sense to their goals to be more villainous, to make Sam have more.
Depends on what their goals are. I don't know what their goals are. that's part of my problem with all of this. And like, yeah. Cause I hear what you're saying. Like you're saying that like, well, she was acting differently in relation to her goals just for the sole purpose of giving, you know, making it a little bit easier for our heroes to fight her. I'm not saying that you're wrong in that, but I'm saying that they didn't do a good job of really establishing what the goals of their organization were as a whole. And I mean, you know, at this point, it's fairly well known that something got cut out of this show. And I feel as though we really got a botched overall series with this. Like, I feel as though there needs to be some explanation, like a lot more, like for example, the lady that died, that they went to her funeral. That was like a big plot point. It was all happening here. And we know this is going to be the place because this is a super important person to these people. Cool. But like, why are we just now hearing about her then? Like, shouldn't that have been set up somewhere earlier in the series, you know?
Yeah, like, I'm wondering, was that cut? Was it, do they have it on film somewhere and they just cut it because they needed to make 6 episodes and they couldn't do that? Or, like, I wonder how that went down.
There was a theory at one point that there was that the government was using this concept of a global pandemic to, like, you know, I guess force people to go back into lockdown. To like basically shut down the countries again, and for obvious reasons they wouldn't go with that plot line because like, we did have a global pandemic by the time it actually saw the light of day. But I think that's been debunked at this point. I don't know that that's actually true anymore.
I think
is true rather.
I don't know, but like as far as their goal, like the Flag Smasher's goal, it was they were fighting that global repatriation council.
Yeah, no, I got that. But even the council didn't show up until the last minute. Like, I feel as though we really should have, if the council is really to some extent.
Well, they talked about it like in a couple, like the places where they were staying, like they were staying in a bunch of abandoned places and whatnot that were abandoned due to the blip. And then people come back. And so or someone had taken over your house while you were blipped. And right. So now you have no place to stay. And all of those people, like you could see there were posters on the place saying, you know, you got to go. The repatriation council is like, condemning this or collecting this building so that you can't use it anymore or something like that. It was like a forced migration of people who had been there,
during the blip,
or was it the people who came back after the blip who then didn't have a place to go?
Oh yeah. That's probably, that makes a lot of sense.
And so they're trying to protect those refugees, right? Like, so their whole thing was they wanted to expatriate them somewhere else, but all these people came back. Like, I guess it's kind of like, you know, you get blipped and then you come back and like, let's say you're in Germany and you get blipped out of Germany. Germany has 5 years. Okay. All these things happen. You come back and then now you're just sort of like here, but Germany's moved on. And so they don't want you here anymore. And so the Global Repatriation Council was like, we're just going to take all these people and put them somewhere. Whereas Carly was like, no, these people are Germans. They should be able to live in Germany. And what you're doing is dangerous and bad.
No, I got that. Like, I think that's the thing. Like, I think
that's their main goal, though.
But that was definitely their goal by the end of it. Like by the last episode, like things got much clearer at the very tail end. But I think overall, and this is really kind of my point, it was just very convoluted with very poor execution story-wise, especially as it relates to the villains.
Because I guess before that, like all we really heard about the Flag Smashers was them like stealing supplies and stuff. Yeah. But it was ultimately to support those refugees.
I think I would have liked a deeper exploration of Carly's character.
And I would have liked for them not to just make her a psychopath at the end of it.
Well, I mean, she could be anything because I felt like she changed a couple of times during the course of it. And so I think that was cool concept. I think they wanted to do more of the character than maybe they just didn't feel comfortable doing with her, or something of that nature. Or maybe there was a storyline that, that would have kind of explained her a little bit more. But regardless, I don't know. I think it's unfortunate that character kind of was handled as poorly as she was, because I think that they were playing around with some very interesting concepts.
Yeah.
And really trying to flesh out the universe as a whole. And I think the execution was all messed up. If anything, like I would actually argue that they should have probably leaned more into the pure super soldier element now and tell more of the flag smasher type of story later. I get how it ties specifically into Sam's journey, but at the same time, I think that kind of the who will wield the shield aspect of things got a little bit too messed into to Carly's storyline. And yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think go with something a little dumber for a villain, like a dumber concept for a villain, instead of trying to, you know, go with something a little bit more complicated, because you've got a lot of other like larger complex aspects.
Yeah, because you have, you know, like Sam's whole story, like race relations in America, in the past and today, and maybe they didn't want to add another message on top of that to either diminish that message or muddy it. I don't know.
Yeah. That was my main, I guess, criticism on the whole, was just how that storyline was handled. And the flag smasher character in particular, I would have expected more. And it was just kind of a bit of a convoluted mess in my humble opinion.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what about you, man? What are your thoughts?
Well, one thing you mentioned earlier, how Marvel seems to be really good about taking characters and keeping them kind of, you know, core to who they are. Like the example that you made about Killmonger in this What If. I mean, I haven't seen it, so I don't know what you're talking about, but it seems, you know, they didn't change core aspects of his character just because it's a What If story.
Right.
They did that to Sharon Carter. Like real bad.
Sharon Carter. What did they do to Sharon Carter, man?
I wanted to say it right when you said that and just be like, Sharon Carter.
Right.
But I didn't. But like, yeah, like that was it was a shock to me, and not one of those, ooh, that was cool kind of shock. Like, I'm surprised and excited about that. I was like, what?
Yeah, no. It was shocking because it was a bad decision. And then on top of that, everyone saw it coming too. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, y'all are going to really do this to Sharon. Okay.
Yeah.
That was weird. That was a choice.
It was a choice.
It was a choice.
I don't know. It just seemed way out of place for what we've seen of her character.
It made no sense whatsoever.
Yeah, and I didn't like that. Like, I think it was cool to see Sharon Carter in the show, and I thought it would have been better to have her in another kind of role and then maybe bring somebody else in as the power broker. Because just like, or I don't know, maybe like, if you want to have her as the power broker, have part of her character be to wind up as the power broker. Maybe let's see her transition from hero to villain.
Yeah, that would be good.
And not just have it happen off screen, because didn't make any sense. And like, that would make sense, right? Like, you know, like they defeat the power broker, she's reinstated at the CIA, there's this huge power vacuum, and like, we see her start as a hero, and we see her make decisions along the way that make sense for her to step into that role as the power broker by the end of the show. Because that's where they wanted her to be. You know, clearly, that's where she is.
Yeah.
And so it would just made way more sense to me. You know, maybe she's working for the power broker as like reluctantly because she has to, because, you know, something, but like, just to go from seeing her in, you know, Kiss Cap and in Civil War. And I'm trying to think of the,
no, I think that's the last time we saw her.
Yeah. Like, that's the last time we saw her. Right. And now all of a sudden she's just like, you know, big bad. I'm like, huh?
This gets to my whole thing. This show is trying to do too much. It's trying to tell us too much information compact in the series.
I think maybe were there just too many accessory characters for Captain America, and they just tried to cram stuff into them, like in this show, for all of them.
I really do feel like if you took every single plot line in this, like that, there's again good concepts all around, but like you could stretch this out into two seasons easy.
Yeah,
and they probably should have. Like, again, I would go with like the Serpent Society or some throwaway villains as kind of like who they're up against, and really make the villain, so to speak, kind of the main crux of the series, Sam Wilson coming to term with being, you know, America's first Black Captain America. Well, that's not actually even accurate. Discovering he would not be the first Black Captain America, but also just kind of the concept of being Black in Captain America.
Well,
on top of being Black in America, like that is some rich storytelling. And I think some of the best aspects of this show was when they explored that. And so, you know, I think the Flag Smashers and the world building and kind of the global, arguably kind of like global trauma and the world trying to deal with a post blip world. I get why we need to get that done now. But at the same time, I also think that there's some breathing room. Like, I think that you could easily, I mean, you know, it's not like we're not going to be talking about COVID 10 years from now. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah.
I think it gives important context to some of the other movies, right? Movies or shows or something, like, you know, because in Spider-Man Far From Home, the blip's a big joke, right? Like, you know, a band shows up in band practice. Yeah, because we're seeing it from
like a kid's perspective, sure.
Yeah, but like there were really big implications for that. And I think they wanted to show that in a show that could give it, you know, the gravitas, I guess, that it needed. But yeah, it just, I don't know. It there was a lot going on.
Yeah.
It was nice to see that. It was a good thing to like see that exploration.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It just, there, yeah.
I think you could have had Sharon, her whole story could really be part of like a season two type deal. I think, you know, definitely have kind of the US agent is kind of like the big, essentially, you know, pseudo villain of this. Although I will say this, I was glad that they made US agent very much like an anti-hero.
Yeah.
Cause I was thinking like, you know, I mean like, you know, real talk, there are going to be people that watch the show and really like him. Like, he's going to speak to some people that are going to feel represented in that character. I mean, you know, regardless of how you feel about that, that's just true. And so it's actually kind of interesting to keep him around in an anti-hero capacity, because I'm very curious where he falls in the sandbox. I think to some extent we know, because Elaine came and recruited him to, you know, the Thunderbolts or the Dark Avengers or whatever it may be. But regardless, I think he's a very interesting character to keep around as an anti-hero, as opposed to like a true villain.
Yeah. Yeah. He's definitely more interesting in that regard. I mean, like he just from seeing what we've seen of him, he couldn't be a hero. Like, he's not a hero. Right. I think he struggles to be a good person. But you know, his flaws prevent him from being Cap. Right.
Right. Right.
At his core, he still tries to do the right thing, you know, in air quotes.
Well, and at his core, he's a soldier.
Yeah. So like whereas Cap might take issue with an order to like, you know, burn down an apartment building or blow up an apartment building because there's like, you know, terrorists in the basement of it, Cap wouldn't do that. Whereas Walker would, because yeah, he was ordered to do so. And the end goal here is to get rid of the terrorists. And so we're going to get rid of the terrorists.
Well, and I mean, remember the charge that Cap was given before he even became Captain America, you know, don't be a perfect soldier, be a good man.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, what we got with US Agent was a perfect soldier, but not necessarily a good man.
Yeah.
Not necessarily.
I don't think he's a bad person.
I don't know. I think it'll be very interesting to see where he falls into things. I'm also very curious, because this was the first time that we got introduced to Madame Hydra and to Elaine coming around and recruiting folks. There was a lot of Googling when she first showed up, like, wait, who is she? And so, and you know, it's interesting because of course she first showed up here, but she would have originally showed up in Black Widow, which was scheduled to release before this originally.
Yeah.
So I think it actually works better that she was introduced in this. I think it makes this series better as a whole to kind of have that mystery play in.
It makes the coda after Black Widow hit a lot harder.
Big time. Yes.
Yeah. Because otherwise you'd be like,
Well, exactly right. Well, that's the thing, right? Because again, US Agent, we're introduced to him. And again, you're going to have feelings about this character. You might like him. You might hate him, but you're going to have feelings about him. And then, so he's getting recruited by Elaine. You're like, okay, well, is this good? Is this evil? What's going on? But then you see, you know, little sister getting the invite to the Dark Avengers party. And you're like, well, wait, I like her.
Yeah.
She's definitively liked by all. Like, she's not a questionable, like, I mean, yeah, she, I mean, assassin, sure. But I mean, like, you know.
But she's not like, she doesn't have the, she's got a better moral compass.
She's not morally gray. She doesn't quite, she's not as morally gray. She's as morally gray as Black Widow to some extent. Like, but like, that's about it.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, you know, John Walker is kind of like is he good sort of person where, what's her name? Is it?
You kind of get the sense that you would see like all these thought pieces, like in like 5 years, like John Walker actually good though, or John Walker actually evil though, like still the judgment's out. We don't know.
Yeah. But like, yeah. Cause like Yelena, you're like, okay, she's clearly a hero.
Right.
She, in the same sense that Black Widow's a hero. Yeah. Black Widow was, you know, an assassin. She's killed people and stuff, but she's clearly a hero. And Yelena is, I think, clearly a hero. You know, she in the same kind of like background and whatnot, but like she didn't let that compromise her moral compass, I guess you could say. And she does heroic things and she is a hero. And US Agent, you're kind of like, I mean, like, I guess he's a hero. Well, not really, maybe.
And part of that is the way, obviously the part of that is the way that he's presented to us, right? Like, you know, Cap has killed people, but Falcon has killed people. Like this, like they go to battle and they have killed like their enemies. Like, this is not, we're not in a world where these heroes don't kill. They certainly do, but there's just a way in which, you know, he goes about it that certainly kind of communicates to us that, like, I don't know about this dude. I don't know.
He killed like a defenseless guy in a fountain with a shield, like,
yeah, that. asking for mercy, and that is something we've never seen Falcon, we've never seen Cap do.
Yeah.
You know, the only time we've really seen Cap giddy about a battle is up against Ultron. Like when Ultron was saying something to him and then he kicked him off the the floating island and he's like, what was that? You didn't finish. Like, Cap almost never quips in battle, and it's just like, that was pretty solid.
Yeah. Anyway.
All right, well, there you go. Any other thoughts about the series as a whole?
I did like it. I did enjoy it. I don't know if I enjoyed it better than some of the others, as you said as well. It really kind of, the big takeaways that I had here. I'm remembering this now. This is what I wanted to talk about. And yeah, it was, I know it doesn't happen in the comics, but I kind of thought that Sam was going to get the super soldier serum.
I'm glad that he didn't though. I'm glad that he didn't.
Like, part of me's glad. Yeah. Cause I mean, it's defining part of his character, right? Is it like, he doesn't have the super soldier serum.
Well, and honestly, like his, you know, quote unquote power, so to speak, his uniqueness is his wings. And yeah. So, you know, so it's Captain America with a different power set. Sure. But I think it's actually better that he's not just trying to be another Cap. He's not just trying to be another Steve. Like, he's Sam, he's the Falcon who became Captain America. So now he is definitively Captain America, but he is still also definitively Sam Wilson. So I think whereas with US Agent, you saw, you know, a country and a guy who was trying to be another Steve, just, you know, a Steve that they could control. Sam recognized that the next Captain America needed to be what Steve was, and that was his own man. And so, yep, not to be another Steve, but to be Sam as Captain America. And so,
you know, I thought it would happen in a way where it, you know, because I don't think Sam would ever choose to take the serum. I don't think he would. And I thought it
under extreme circumstances, sure, but it's not like I can't see him being like tempted to do it.
Right. But I thought it might happen in a way where, like, he, you know, it's done like against his will, because like, oh, it's the only way we can save Sam is if we, you know, get him with the super soldier serum or something like that. And then, you know, just, I don't know, like every time I watch Iron Man and like I see him, you know, take a hit to the chest or to the head, I'm like, he's liquid inside that suit.
I mean, look at, Black Widow just survived in the Black Widow movie.
Where I know, and she falls off the building. I'm like, yeah, she's dead, but she's not dead. But like with Cap, you know, I can with Thor, I can, you know, all that kind of stuff. Drax, he's an alien, you know, whatever.
Superheroes, man, just, you know,
live. Yeah, I know.
Live and let live. It's fun. It's fine.
It would just be, you know, when you see Falcon, you know, take like a 30G turn in midair and stuff. Right.
All right.
I don't know, but yeah, overall I enjoyed it. There were a couple things that I didn't really like, but I think it's gotten me really excited for whatever Valentina Allegra de Fontaine has planned.
Sure.
Because I'm curious to see what's going to happen with U.S. Soldier and with Yelena. It's good to see Bucky get a little bit of closure, I guess, sort of.
Yeah.
The tie-ins with Dora
Milaje.
There we go. Dora Mila. That's not Dora. Dora Milaje, I think, is what I was about to say. But yeah, it was great to have that be tied in, because that would be a giant plot hole they would have to figure out how to fix. But yeah, overall, did enjoy it. Had issues primarily with the villain and with the horrible treatment of Sharon Carter.
Yeah, I mean, if I had my way, I would remove Sharon from like her storyline. She could be referenced in the series or even like appear in the series, but I would have her becoming the power broker completely removed from this and saved for a season two. I would remove the entire Flag Smasher plot line and put that in its own season. And I would have cranked up more and had more of the plot revolved around perhaps like looking deeper into the Isaiah Bradley character and kind of really kind of making that be the primary focus, like looking into the super soldier serum as it relates to him. And, you know, I think, I would maintain what they did with Zemo, because Zemo provides a lot of commentary around the concept of super soldiers and kind of, you know, again, answering this question of what is Captain America. And I think that's a good question for the series to ask. I think that there's a lot of ways they handled that well. I think that they tried to do more than they should have in the first season. And I think that's unfortunate. But for me, man, I give it a 2 out of 5 stars.
That's 2 out of 5.
I mean, that's about as high as I can give it. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I was going to give it a 3 because I was entertained.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I was tuning in, but I'm like, you know, this also had the benefit of being one of the few new things that we were getting at the time. but no, I mean, I was always very curious, but I found myself becoming less and less like able to keep up with what was going on. And maybe I'm just not as smart as I used to be, but regardless, that's our take. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Send in your thoughts to the show. You can follow us at Twitter at Flash TV Talk. What? Flash TV Talk? This is TV Talk Plus, right? Yes, we're continuing on our TV Talk Plus series. We'll have a Loki TV Talk coming your way very, very soon. And don't forget, coming in October, we've got a big announcement, huge announcement coming your way that you'll definitely want to check out. By the way, speaking of some big things happening, we've got a big episode of Flashcraft coming your way as well. So if you've not checked out the Flash TV Talk YouTube channel, this is a good time to do it. Had a lot of fun with some folks playing some games, and you'll learn more about it there. I think that is it. Bell.
No, it's not it.
It's not it, though. What else do we need to tell people?
I have a spoiler for the Flashcraft episode.
Oh, what is it?
I've come back to you.
Oh my gosh.
At the turn of the tide.
Oh man, it's a fun one. A lot of live streams for that one, and it was a blast. But so yeah, you can learn more about
quite
that
literally.
Again. Yeah, Flash TV Talk's YouTube channel. But yes, follow us on Twitter at Flash TV Talk, Facebook.com/Flash TV Talk. All that information and more can be found at FlashTVTalk.com. Bell, I think that is going to do it for us for this week. But don't worry, we'll be back in a flash.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.